Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that England was basically a hellscape. Crime, poverty, and overpopulation were major problems. Now we're going to zoom in on the King of England at the time, King James I. We're going to go a little in depth to figure out exactly why he was so desperate for the first permanent English colony in the Americas to be successful. Why did he care? He was the King of England, right? James I was born in Scotland in 1566. His mom and dad were King and Queen of Scotland. James I was the great-great-grandson of Henry Tudor. So he didn't descend from the infamous Henry VIII, but Henry VIII's sister had been forced to marry the King of Scotland, and James I was her descendant. She had kids, and they had kids, and then they had James. This meant that he had lots of full-on royal English blood, and lots of royal Scottish blood. He was also Queen Elizabeth's cousin. I know, it's weird. Royals were basically all like this. They kept things in the royal family. Just know that he was a royal with both English and Scottish royal blood. Let's take a peek into what his childhood was like so we can see why he became the type of king that he was. His mother and father ruled Scotland, but they had a really bad relationship. And his father was murdered when James was only 8 months old. His mother wasn't liked, like, at all in Scotland. Rumors spread that she had a hand in her husband's murder. Those rumors never came to any actual charges, but it made people hate her even more. People were nice enough to her while his father was alive, because they liked him, but now that he was nice and murdered, the nobles who hated her could finally show her just how little respect they had for her. And they did. They imprisoned her and forced her to give up her claim to the throne and give it to her son, James, who was still a baby. She did give up her throne because, I mean, who wouldn't while being forced into prison by people who hate you with no chance of any help? And if this tale isn't sad enough, here's a dose of terrible. After the Scottish nobles threw her in prison, James never saw his mom again. She did manage to escape the Scottish prison about a year later and fled to England. She reached Queen Elizabeth's court, and Queen Elizabeth greeted her more warmly than the Scottish nobles and promptly threw her in prison. She remained in English prison until she died a famous gruesome death, which we'll get to a little bit later in this episode. As a reminder, to really make this point clear, she never saw her son again, and James grew up without ever knowing his mother or his father, who was murdered when James was a baby. He was raised by several teachers. The most important teacher in his life beat him on a daily basis and instilled a fear of God into him. Not the Catholic God, the Protestant God. Because he was only an infant when his father was killed and his mother imprisoned, someone else who was an adult had to sit on the throne of Scotland and rule until James was an adult himself. Four people ruled in James's place while he was growing up. Why so many? Why not just one guy to rule in his place? Well, it's because they were all murdered, one after another, like some gruesome Halloween movie. The first person who ruled in his place was assassinated by a gun. He was actually the first head of a government to ever be assassinated with a gun. This was in the year 1570. The second person who ruled in James's place was his grandfather, his dad's dad. He was killed, also by a gun, in a sudden attack by some of his mother's supporters who didn't like that she was imprisoned and felt she needed to be freed to rule Scotland again. The third person to rule in James's place seems to have been poisoned to death at a banquet held by the man who would take over the position next. Little suspicious. So the fourth person to rule in James's place was the banquet thrower, and I think poisoner. He managed to stay alive and rule in James's place for about 11 years until he was charged with having a hand in murdering James's father and was beheaded by a rough early version of the guillotine. Finally, after this series of murders and accidental poisoning, James was crowned King of Scotland when he was 15 years old. This was considered an adult at the time. Luckily, he wasn't assassinated. James was the King of Scotland, but he was also a great writer. He wrote poems and books and even wrote some music. He loved the Scottish language and used it in his music and poems instead of using English. He made efforts for teaching how to read to his citizens, and he made laws that spread the teaching of music. One of the books he wrote while he was King of Scotland was called The True Law of Free Monarchies. This was decades before he became King of England. It was basically a guide on how to rule as a king. It said that the king was higher than his subjects and that he ruled with God's blessing. God would punish wicked kings and kings who didn't honor and obey God. It also said that Parliament was only there to help the king, not to rule over the king. This is really important because it gives us an idea as to what James thought of Parliament, and this attitude towards Parliament would end up causing a lot of problems for him. He later gave the book to his son as a gift so he could be informed of all these little nuggets of life and wisdom. On top of that, when he was the King of England, he instructed the Bible to be translated into English, which we know as the King James Version. Before this, the Bible was in Latin. Most people couldn't understand it, and they had to rely on church officials reading it to them. And everybody had to just take the church official's word that what he was telling them was actually what was written, and that he knew Latin well enough that he was interpreting it correctly. Tricky stuff. So making the Bible into English, a language that everybody could read, was a big deal. A little reminder here that this isn't a podcast about James I, although we could definitely make one, and we might one day. This episode is to give an idea into the mind of the man who ruled England when the first permanent English settlement was made in America. I'm talking about Jamestown, which was named after him. We'll get there. We're so close. Just stick with me for a little bit. So, back to James, just 3 years after he began to rule Scotland on his own without anyone holding the throne for him, James was captured in a raid by Scottish nobles who were unhappy with James on the throne. Surprise, surprise. These nobles didn't seem to have anything better to do than capture people they didn't like. James was held as a prisoner by these nobles for 10 months. While he was their prisoner, these nobles took control of the government. That should work out just fine, right? James eventually escaped, and the group that was holding him prisoner lost control of the government. A few years later, he made peace with Queen Elizabeth, basically promising not to fight her or England, and that he was totally cool with Elizabeth keeping his mother as her prisoner like she had been by this point for nearly 20 years. Keep in mind, he never really knew his mother. The last time he ever saw her was when he was 1 year old. He also had to think about the fact that everyone, including Elizabeth, knew that he would inherit the English throne after Elizabeth died. He was the next in line because Elizabeth had no children, and James descended from Henry VIII's sister. So he was a descendant of the Tudors. Really, there was no point in going to war with England, and if history repeats itself, which it usually does, Scotland didn't stand a chance against England if he did decide to go to war with England. Okay, so there's peace between Scotland and England. No need for any aggressive moves, right? Well, not exactly. A lot of nobles in England didn't like Queen Elizabeth. Those tricksy nobles, the same everywhere you go. They mostly didn't like her because she wasn't Catholic, and Catholics in England at this time were being murdered and treated pretty badly, all with her consent. James's mother had a solid claim to the English throne. After all, she was also a descendant of Henry VIII's sister. And best of all, she was Catholic. If these Catholic nobles could assassinate Queen Elizabeth, free James's mother, and place her on the English throne, surely the Catholics in England would finally be safe. Well, maybe. But this isn't how it played out. The nobles tried to carry out this plan, but it was discovered, and James's mother was accused of being a part of it. She was accused of sending secret messages telling the nobles, "Yeah, totally, let's do this," from inside her prison cell in England. The plot was real, it actually did exist, and there were many attempts to assassinate Queen Elizabeth, but they all failed. And historians debate over whether or not these letters that were found describing this plot were actually from James's mother or were forged to make it look like they were from her. Anyways, remember that famous gruesome death I told you about befalling James's mother? Well, 7 months after the peace was agreed to between Queen Elizabeth and James, Queen Elizabeth had his mother beheaded with an axe, one in which the executioner missed and gashed her head on the first blow while she was still alive. James was unhappy with this, but he held to his agreement to not fight England. Again, what would that accomplish? His mother, whom he didn't really ever know, was now dead. He was gonna inherit the English throne anyways, and he didn't stand a chance against the English military. So fast forward 16 years later. In 1603, Queen Elizabeth died, and James became the King of England. Because James was the King of Scotland and now also the King of England, he brought the kingdoms of Scotland and England together. Scotland wasn't happy about this. They had a different religion, and wars of religion were all the fashion back then. They were also the smaller and less influential of the two kingdoms. For centuries, they resisted England controlling any part of them. Now, they had no choice. They were automatically joined with England because the same guy ruled over both of them. This was a potentially dangerous situation for James. Anyone with enough influence could gather people who didn't like this union of England and Scotland and attack James in an attempt to break the union of England and Scotland. I mean, if they could kill James, then the next King of Scotland wouldn't also be the King of England. He would just be the King of Scotland. Bing, bang, bam, mission accomplished. No more union. All they had to do was kill James. Again, this isn't a podcast about James I. This is to give an idea of the type of man he was and why he did the things he did. The things he did resulted in a desperate need to establish a colony in America. So stay with me here and we'll get there. Soon, I promise. Okay, so where were we? Right, assassinating James. To nobody's surprise, 2 years after James became the King of England, a young Catholic man named Guy Fawkes tried to blow up Parliament while James and the members of Parliament were inside. This failed, of course, and he and his buddies who were in on it were executed, and there were no other major attempts on James's life. But James did have a problem with the English Parliament. Keep in mind that England had many, many revolts and uprisings over the issue of whether or not the king could just tax his people whenever he wanted. All of those revolts and uprisings ended with a law saying that the king could not tax his people whenever he wanted. Only Parliament could do that. So, if the king needed money, he needed Parliament to say, yeah, sure, let's tax people for the things you need money for. Unfortunately for James, the king's bank account was £600,000 in debt. That's £187 million in today's dollars, or £147 million in today's pounds. This was his personal debt, not including the debt he inherited from Queen Elizabeth. He needed money not just to pay off his debt, but also to live off of. All of those servants, food, jewelry, clothing, events, traveling, and everything else he could want required tons of money. In addition to that, a war between Queen Elizabeth and Ireland just before he inherited the throne had left a £400,000 debt in England's bank account. Queen Elizabeth didn't have the money to wage that war, so she borrowed it from other people. And when James inherited the throne, that debt was now his, and he had to pay it. Together with his personal £600,000 debt and Queen Elizabeth's £400,000 debt, he was £1 million in debt. That's a total of £312 million in today's dollars, or £245 million in today's pounds. Think about that. Think about if you were in debt that much, how desperate you would be to pay at least some of that off. So he went to Parliament, crown in hand. May I have some tax money, please? Sure, they said, no problem. All you gotta do is sign these laws. Parliament could make laws, sure, but they weren't actually real laws that were officially in place until the king signed them. And the king could refuse. This is still in place today in England. Of course, nowadays, the King or Queen of England can't refuse to sign laws, but Parliament still needs that signature. If the Parliament in England were to pass a law today, they would still need King Charles to sign it. Kind of like our governors sign laws in the United States today. Okay, so back to Parliament in King James's time. He could say no, and Parliament knew this. So he wanted something from them, and they wanted a signature from the king. Why not make a deal so everyone gets what they want? They even threw in an enticing yearly treasure chest of money that they would just give to him from taxes, forever. Pretty sweet deal for the king, right? But James refused to sign those laws. It went back and forth like this for a while until King James kicked Parliament out of the building and didn't allow them to come back for around 10 years. Back then, Parliament could make laws, yeah, but they needed the king to agree to let them gather to even make the laws. So once the king said get out and stay out, they had to stay out. England was ruled over by James without any parliament for that 10 years. But people didn't really care because at this time, the idea of elected people having the power and the king having almost no power like it is today was crazy. Without parliament, James had that enormous debt and a high cost of living that was just piling up. He needed money from somewhere else. The colonies were supposed to provide that for him. Anyone bringing items out of the American colonies had to pay a special fee. That fee wouldn't go to Parliament. It would go right into the king's bank account. Bingo. Yahtzee. Perfect. That's reason enough, right? I mean, I would be looking for money if I were King James. Well, there's another reason. Never having been at war with Spain, James devoted his efforts to bringing the long Anglo-Spanish War to an end. And a peace treaty was signed between the two countries in August of 1604, about a year after James had become King of England. Even though they were at peace and not at war, they were still competing against each other for money, power, and land. The Spanish were conquering and colonizing huge swaths of North and South America. If you want to see what true depravity, horror, and terror of colonialism looks like, look no further than what the Spanish did to the natives in the American continents, the Caribbean, and elsewhere. When you learn about Spanish colonialism, it kind of makes England look like the bullies in Spider-Man, and Spain look like Thanos himself, destroyer of worlds and universes. Really, look it up. On top of that, James's other rivals, France and the Netherlands, were gobbling up territory in America too. Remember in the last episode, we talked about the dire conditions of poverty, starvation, and the need for resources in England. Europe looked at land that was undeveloped as if there were no claims on that land. So the vast swaths of forest in Virginia, although claimed by 10 to 12,000 natives, was viewed as though it were unoccupied since there were no houses, buildings, or roads in the area that would become Jamestown. For some, including the broke king, the future of England rested on whether the Englishmen headed to Virginia in 1607 could successfully establish a permanent English colony. Jamestown was what the settlers named the colony. This was, of course, named after King James. And in that town were the dreams of the settlers. In that town were the hopes of England itself. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss the type of government that was set up in the Virginia colony and the violence and drama that ensued because of that government. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.